So welcome everyone to this edition of Happy ME Live. And today we're going to be talking about leadership and how self-awareness can help us be better leaders and succeed as leaders. Leadership, of course, begins with ourselves. Can we manage our own emotions, our behavior, our thoughts, feelings, and our own actions? And then once you can master yourself, only then can you think of leading others. My guest today to explore this with me is Mike Butterwick. Mike has recently retired as a brigadier in the British Army, where he's held multiple leadership positions. So Mike, welcome.
Thank you very much, Manoj. It's lovely to be here.
Do you want to take a minute and introduce yourself, Mike, and talk about
background? That's very kind. Yeah, thank you. So as Manoj said, I've spent a long time in the British Army, so 33 years in all throughout that career. And I suppose if you had to sum up that 33 years in sort of three ways, there's the first way would be leadership. I've had the privilege of leading soldiers in a number of ways, from small teams right up to an organization of 5,000 as the commander of our basic training organization. I led that organization through COVID. The second theme, if you like, is leadership through change. It's either by design or by opportunity, I seem to have landed in places where significant change was always taking place. My last job, I had to change the Army's operating model across the entire enterprise, which was a real challenge. So I've learned a lot of hard lessons about leading people through change. And then the third area is cultural change. Again, in my last job, I was responsible for helping the Army to change its culture, transform its culture, make it the progressive, modern winning Army that it should be in the face of a lot of challenges. So again, some interesting things which I've learned along the way there. So it's been a fantastic career. It's been all over the world. It was time to leave. And now I'm embarking on a new life.
Okay, well, so Mike and I are going to spend about half an hour to 45 minutes talking, and then we're going to invite all of you to comment and ask your questions. In the meantime, as we are talking, please add your thoughts in the chat and we will incorporate that into our discussions. Okay, so Mike, this subject of leadership is important because according to Forbes, 50% of leaders are failing within 2 years. And the list of skills that leaders need now is getting ever longer. We'll discuss a few of these. But leadership is also important because a bad leader can make employees' lives hell and, of course, damage the organization as well. Do you want to explore what a leadership is from your point of view? What would you say leadership is?
Yeah, it's a great way to start, actually, Manoj, because there's so many definitions out there about leadership, and you can get really complex. And there's lots of academia about it and lots of great big things about leadership. And I just love a very simple definition, which was taught to me very early in my career, which is simply this, which is leading is inspiring others to act. And I think there's a distinct difference between leadership and management in this case. Management is, if you like, the science. It's the organizing the blocks of teams or tasks, whatever it might be, to get things done. And it's really important. But there's something different about leadership, and it's that word inspiration. There's a misnomer that in the Army, all we do is compel people, we tell people what to do. And of course, underneath it, yes, we can do that. But in my experience, it's about the worst way you can lead. And when you're faced with the toughest of challenges, the most difficult things, that ability to inspire, I think, is absolutely fundamental to what leadership is all about.
Yes.
And I think the only other point I would make to sort of begin with is leadership is not just about the leader. Leadership is not just top down, the person in charge inspiring others to act. I think it can come from below as well. Leadership doesn't have to be about just the person in charge, but there's something about inspiration which I think runs through it all.
Yes, thank you for that. Okay. All right. And here in this particular talk, what we're going to do is explore self-awareness and how that plays a role in helping a leader flourish in that role. And to give you some idea what self-awareness is, again, like leadership, there's so many different examples. But say we're in a conversation, you and I, and if I notice that you're interrupting me, that's awareness. If I notice I'm interrupting you, that's self-awareness. And emotional intelligence is then asking a question. Why are we both interrupting each other? What's going on in the deeper layers of our mind to make us behave or think in this way? So that's just to set the ball rolling. And what Mike and I are going to do is explore how self-awareness applies to five or six key areas: relationships, communication, dealing with challenges, negative feedback, and making better decisions. And if we can get through all of that, I think we'd have done well. So, Mike, let's start with relationships. They are, of course, the key to successful leadership. Do you want to start the ball rolling on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree, and I think the thing which I throw in about self-awareness is I was privileged during my career to spend a year with the American Army at their U.S. Army War College, which is effectively their academy for senior leaders, turning them from tactical leaders into strategic leaders. And there was a great big course ahead, and there was all sorts of international relations to study and lots of things. But the very first lesson of this strategic leaders course was self-awareness. It was understand yourself before you can act at the strategic level as a leader. And I thought that was very powerful. So
Yes.
there's something in this, which I think is really, really important. And it's not just because you and I are saying it. I think others have clicked onto this
Yes.
as well. But I mean, you talk about relationships. I think again, it goes back to that misnomer that in a sort of an army context, we just compel people, we just tell people to act. It's probably the worst way of leading. Of course, there is a requirement for it on occasion, of course. But the majority of time, it's all about building trust, isn't it? You can only build trust when you've built up those relationships, perhaps over time. And it's in that trust in those difficult moments that the sort of team will come together. And I think the leader's role is absolutely to ensure that the relationships across the team, the organization, whatever scale of leadership challenge they have, is that trust runs through. And that's all about emotional intelligence and really knowing those people. There's a wonderful leader that all British Army people are always talked about, which is Bill Slim. So Field Marshal Bill Slim led the Burma campaign in the Second World War, went on to become the Governor General of Australia. And he used to use a phrase, which is know your men. Now, if we bring that into the 21st century, know your people, I think that's a really powerful leadership thing to do. Really know and love the people that you are having the privilege to lead. Really know how they work, know how they operate, know their strengths and weaknesses, know what matters to them. I think that's the first thing that any leader must do.
Yes. And of course, when relationships sour, for example, there was a big report in a heart center in London where the outcomes were really poor. And they boiled it down to one simple thing, that the teams were at war with each other. The two big surgeons involved in that team were at war with each other. And that resulted in poor outcomes. So relationship skill is a skill that's not taught to us anywhere in education. And leaders don't go on a relationship course. Everyone assumes that we automatically know, but of course we don't. It's the single biggest challenge that we humans face because 80% of relationships are in conflict, according to all the studies. And we did a poll on LinkedIn asking, why do leaders fail? And 45% of respondents said because of poor relationship skills. So it's such an important skill to develop. And how can self-awareness help? Well, the more you understand yourself, the easier it is to understand others, because deep down, we're the same human being. We all operate, for example, from our own conditioning, but we're not aware we're conditioned, and yet we become attached to that. Or we operate from our fear, our self-interest, our ego, our need for, furthering our own interests in any situation. But many of these drivers are hidden from our own understanding. So if we can understand all these in ourselves, it's so much easier to understand what's happening in another person and have compassion for them. Because on every day, each person you meet is going to be different. That's the other challenge leaders have, right? Because today I might be in a really happy mood. Tomorrow I have a big argument with my wife, and that's going to make an impact on my performance at work. So, do you want to talk a little bit, Mike, about the challenges that you faced with relationships in leadership positions?
Yeah, there's a couple of points which I've made which flow from what you just said, Manoj, which is the more senior you get, the more important this becomes because the more power ultimately you wield. And I think it's sometimes very easy that you've got to a certain position because of who you are, because you've either displayed competence or you've spent enough time in the organization and you've been promoted. And you can sometimes convince yourself that therefore what you're doing is 100% right and is always going to be right. And that may not be the case at all. So I think that self-awareness that the context you're going to be operating in once you progress through an organization, you get to a more senior leadership role, may not be completely correct for the particular team or organization you are running. I've often seen brilliant tactical commanders really fail at the strategic level because they just haven't made that shift in the leadership style that they need to adopt. And you're not going to be able to understand that until you really understand what your leadership style is. How do you really do that? The second thing, which I think is important, which sort of flows from that, is it takes time. Relationships take time. You can't just go in and instantly win over everybody in the first 5 minutes. You've got to be prepared to invest in relationship building as a key thing that you do. So understanding yourself to go into that so that you know where things are going to sort of rub you in the wrong way and where you're going to come across in a certain way. But then really investing the time to get to know people, to really understand your team and their strengths and weaknesses and the context in which you're operating. So I was privileged enough in about 2011 to become a commanding officer. That's 600 people, soldiers. It was in the regiment that I had been a company commander in, which was a few years before, and it was 100 soldiers. So I'd progressed. And I'd left that organization in 2006 and was coming back to it in 2011, 5 years later. And I had a plan. I had a real clear vision of what I was going to do with this organization and take it to make it fantastic. And when I walked in 2011, thank goodness I didn't implement that plan. Because what had happened between 2006 and 2011, is the organization had changed. It had been to Afghanistan, it had lost soldiers, it had matured as an organization. The issues that were facing it in 2006 were totally different to that which was facing it in 2011. But thank goodness I took that moment, I took that time to listen, to go out, to understand the context in which my leadership was going to be tested again. And I completely changed the plan and I completely changed what I was going to do. I think that's an example of being self-aware enough to know that my plan was not the right plan for the organization I'd actually inherited because it was different to that which I thought I was going to get.
Mike, so you've said something really important, and that is that we rarely question our own thinking. We always assume, our mind assumes, not you and me, the human mind assumes that what we're thinking is correct, and what we believe is correct, and what we feel is true. And neither of those are correct, actually correct, because our thinking just comes from our particular experiences, our conditioning. So being able to question that and just to observe and then just to pause a second and say, what's going on? Could there be another way of looking at the same thing, which is what your example illustrates? And to have the humility to do that. So leadership is not about power, is it? It's about responsibility and taking care of people and making the right choices. But often leadership is mistaken as something that's linked to power. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I can agree more. I mean, humility is such an underrated, but such an important aspect of great leaders. When I look back to my career and the leaders I have followed and thought were brilliant, there's a continuity through the characteristics that they show, and it's this word humility. And humility is not a lack of strength. These were some of the strongest, most decisive leaders that I've ever worked for. One was when I was on an operational tour in Iraq in some difficult days. But he had the humility to recognize that he needed to, in order to make the right decisions, he was going to have to really listen to his subordinates and have that humility to know that he was not always correct. And I think that's something which I've tried to apply and tried to be throughout my career. I mean, this isn't sort of breaking down in front of everybody and crying every 2 minutes. It's nothing to do with that. It's exposing the fact that you don't necessarily have all the answers, and that not being seen by yourself as a bad thing is actually a really great thing. And I think having humility is a fundamental trait for any leader. And I think the more senior you get, the more it important becomes. Which probably leads to one final point, which is sometimes our context is really constrained because it gets wrapped up in not just an ego, but in, think of a political leader and the ability to really be honest and truthful. And the context that they have to operate in, and or a leader of a big corporation that's made a big call, having the humility to say, actually, we're wrong. Wouldn't it be fantastically refreshing if we could hear that from the most strategic leaders?
Yes.
Really difficult, really difficult. But wow, what a change it would make.
Yes. So important, this business of humility. And I think the other thing that's important is to have that deeper self-confidence in yourself, to not look for validation from outside, because the mind is wired, you see, to constantly seek external validation to feel good about itself. And if you don't spot that in yourself in a leadership position, then you're going to surround yourself with sycophants who are just going to say yes and you're going to favor them. But more importantly, you're not going to be able to hear or give them permission to say the things that, the negative things, for example, that you need to hear. So having that inner self-confidence means that you can then have humility too, because you don't need other people to suck up to you and say how great you are for you to feel good about yourself. Okay, so let's move on to talking about communication, Mike, because we know it's absolutely one of the critical aspects of leadership. Do you want to get the ball rolling on that one and why it's important?
No, it's well, let me tell you a quick story. So I had to lead the Army's basic training organization, and I took over command of that in 2018. And in 2020, we know the world changed because COVID hit, and I found myself in charge of roughly about 5,000 people, recruits and instructors, spread from Northern Ireland across into Scotland, all across the country, across different sites. We were an analog organization. We hadn't really embraced digital technology at all, because not many people had really in 2019, 20. And suddenly, and we had, a mission, which was to train recruits, which was always a physical activity in place. And we couldn't do that. And suddenly, overnight, the organization had to be digitalized. And we had to somehow continue training. We somehow had to communicate what we needed to do, both the health aspects of what we were doing, plus also the mission aspects of what we were doing. And I've probably learned my biggest lesson of all about communications, which is, and leadership and communications, which is you've just constantly got to be out there communicating. And what I found myself doing was using every channel that I could. At the height of the lockdown, it was clearly all digital means. But when we came back, it was physical. And I find myself going to different groups, repeating the same message in a slightly different way for the audience that needed to be there. So leadership and communications are one and the same. The trick, though, and this is where the self-awareness bit comes in, is what you are saying is not necessarily what the audience will hear. And there can be a disconnect between the two. And you may think you're absolutely clear with your intent. You've laid it out brilliantly. How can anybody possibly misinterpret that? But often that does take place, and that's a really difficult thing to know. So I'm being just aware that what you're saying is not necessarily what people will hear, I think, is the first step to good leadership communication.
Thank you for that. So I think self-awareness really contributes to beautiful, better communication. Because, for example, we have a need to be listened to, but not the same need to listen. And when we're listening, we're half distracted, we're interrupting people. And we have a huge module on communication in the app. And one of the, I'll just share a few tips that for me are really important. So normally when we're listening, our first response after a person stops talking is to share what we think. But much better if we could ask a question instead about what they've just said. Helps to clarify, helps them to feel listened to, helps them to feel understood, which is so important. But equally, after we've spoken, to ask a clarifying question. What have you understood from what I've said? And of course, so many times you may mean one thing, but the person has understood something completely different. And that's where all the challenges occur. But lastly, I'd like to also talk a little bit about communicating with kindness and with empathy. Because about 70% of people in the world have suffered some kind of trauma. This is, and we've had a big talk on that in the past. So you have to tailor your message based on that and be sensitive to how it's being received. Before we speak, if we can pause and ask, is this a kind way of saying something? Is this the right time? How is this going to be received right now by this person, etc.? So it's not about you, but about the other person. Do you want to speak a little bit about kindness, Mike? Kindness in communication, even in, say, the army?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's a misnomer that the army is unkind. No, I'm not trying to say that nobody in the army ever shouts and we don't do difficult things. Of course not. That would be complete nonsense. But again, it's about how do you really connect with people if you're just an unkind, toxic leader who just is horrible in their language to people. What you're actually doing is ruling by fear. And fear is about the worst way to motivate people. You know, go back to that original definition of inspiring to act. So speaking with kindness doesn't mean softness.
No.
It means understanding the context of what somebody is trying to do and inspiring them to act into the thing that we actually need them to do. So if you go right to the basics of what the army is there to do. You know, I can speak from my own experience of first coming across fear in my very first operational tour quite a long time ago, and in the context of what followed, actually nothing like the sort of things that others have done in their careers. But the very first time that there was a threat and soldiers looking at you for leadership, which always happens to every army officer at some stage in their career, you don't simply bark orders out to make things happen. You're actually doing it in a way that you know will have an effect on the people that are around you. And this, even in the most dramatic moments, there's a kindness in the way that you are trying to inspire others. Others to act. It can be in the most extreme examples. You know, again, go back to our schools. When a great leader tells people to do something in the staff environment in the army, the chief of staff will read back at the end of the meeting that which has been said. It's such a simple thing,
right?
But so often there's a disconnect between what the leader has thought they said and what the chief of staff has read back. Works brilliantly in an army context, and I'm absolutely convinced that that can go from the army to the boardroom and beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond, I think that's a really simple technique.
Thanks for that, Mike. So you've said a few things which I want to pick up on. The first is just to ask somebody what they've understood, whether it's in a one-to-one conversation or a one-to-group, which is what you've just said. But I also want to pick up on the subject of fear. So many leaders in so many parts of the world think leadership is about power and fear, and fear is the best way of getting a job done. And there, I've come across many leaders who are convinced that that's the best way. But there's two or three reasons why that isn't. Firstly, if you're anxious, your mental capacity is already down by 30 to 40%. So you're not going to get the best out of that person. You're going to get people who'll say yes to you, even when the ship is burning, and say, no, no, everything is fine, because they're just afraid of you. So if you really want to be a good leader, you have to first understand your own fears, get past them, and realize that if you're leading with fear, you're not going to do get the best out of people, and you might damage the organization in the process. You know, people are just going to leave. Nobody wants to live in this, and the best people will leave. You'll be stuck with all the people who've got nowhere else to go, right? Okay. So
I
let's
can
move
agree.
on, Mike. You want to, sorry, you want to come in on that at all?
No.
Okay.
All good.
So we're moving on to talking about dealing with challenges, dealing with stress. Whether you're a leader or you're a manager or individual, we're all going to face challenges. So do you want to begin exploring that, and how do leaders cope with stress, anxiety, and all that?
Let's go back to, that very first definition of inspiring others to act again. Management is the straightforward thing. You wouldn't need a leader if it was easy. If there was no challenge ahead, then why would you need a leader in the first place? So in other words, a leader's very job is to get through those difficult moments, to try and help others to cope with what is ahead. Again, in an army context, it can be the most extreme issues that we're dealing with, but it could be something completely different. As I go into my new world, it might be there's a really difficult decision to make on investments or whatever it might be. So leadership in stressful times is sort of the job of a leader. That's what it
Yes,
is.
yes.
Otherwise, you don't need that leadership in the first place. So the point I would make there is, well, let's prepare for it. Let's be prepared to be in those stressful situations, and let's pr be prepared to lead through stressful times. Much of that is very much self-reflection, self-awareness. It's about physical and mental resilience that you've built into yourself over time. Being physically fit, I think, is a prerequisite for any leader. I'm not sure I'm saying you need to be able to run an ultramarathon, but it's very difficult if you haven't got the physical fitness to be physically resilient at the times of extreme stress. But of course, so much of it is mental resilience as well, that strength to know that as things are going wrong around you, that you can still clearly focus on what is important and give clarity and vision and be that light to lead out of the darkness. You only got to look at the news and see some of the leadership that has to be done in some of the most extreme situations that are facing us right now. But how do you do that? I think it's about training. I think it's about preparation. And I always find it amazing that the army, basically, when it's not doing its operations, is preparing for operations. It trains, it plans for the crisis. It has war games, if you want to use a sort of a word, which actually we don't use that often in the army, but those sort of things in order to test our ability to react to the crisis. I often find that outside a military context, people don't do that because they're afraid of the issues it might expose. And I think that's a huge mistake because how do you know that you're going to be ready on the day of the crisis if you don't prepare for that crisis,
Yes.
both personally and organizationally? So I think dealing with stress is very much about preparing for that stress.
Yes. Thank you for that, Mike. And where self-awareness comes in is you realize that your mind is an automatic reaction machine. So your mind is automatically going to react to the challenges it faces in really predictable patterns. So the more you understand yourself and the deeper you go, the more in charge you can be of that reaction. So there might be hell going on outside you, around you, but in yourself, this self-awareness allows you to be calm, to separate yourself from what's happened. So many times as a surgeon, I was faced with a crisis, a torn blood vessel, the tummy is just filled up, the patient's going to be dead in 2 minutes. You just have to be super calm and separate yourself from what's happening. All I did is put a finger on the vessel and said, call the vascular surgeon. And I waited for 2 hours while he turned up, just with my finger on that. And he came in and quietly, repaired that vessel and everything was fine. So if you start panicking, of course, you're in trouble. So the app has detailed modules on stress and how to deal with it. And here's a few tips. So the first thing is to breathe, practice breathing, so important. The second is to zoom out, because when you're stressed, your mind automatically zooms in. And you might think, I failed the exam, or whatever it might be, it's the end of the world. I better jump off a bridge. Zooming out helps you realize, oh my God, that's just nothing. In a grand scheme of things, everything will pass. No matter what it is, it'll pass, and so on. So there are lots of other tips. Acceptance is the other big one. If something has happened and can't be changed, the sooner you accept something, the sooner you can get over your stress and move on. Ask yourself, what can I do next? And then, of course, in that situation where you don't know, as you said, humility is so important. So often in the operating theater, I know I'm the leader of that team. I'll pause and say, has anyone got any ideas? We're in a pickle here. We've got a problem. And so quite often it'll be the junior most person in the team who might come up with a suggestion. Because when you're stressed, you have to realize your own mental capacity is down by 30, 40, 50% sometimes, because you're in a kind of panic, flight or fight, flight mode. And there might be somebody else in the team who could come up and support you. So I think it doesn't matter whether you're in the army or the operating theater or in a big corporation, the same principles apply. So
It's
moving
really,
on
yeah,
to
it's a
my,
really interesting.
sorry,
Oh,
go
sorry.
on, Mike.
It's a really interesting thing that you talked about, which is giving yourself headspace in the middle of the crisis.
Yes.
And that is what you're describing, that ability just to take a moment before you
Yes.
go again. Fight or flight thing that will happen at the front of your brain when the stress is all around. And I think that's really, that's it. Pipe tobacco. Well done. Well done, Jenny.
Yes.
You remembered.
Yes. And what self-awareness does, you were talking about preparation, right? War games, preparation, challenges. And self-awareness helps to prepare you internally and mentally for those challenges when they arrive. So this is one really important reason. And let me share the story now. So I worked with a colleague of mine who was an anesthetist. Excellent, excellent doctor. And I would have gladly put my life in his hands. So many of my patients did. But one day he had a complaint from a patient, and the general medical council got involved to investigate. He was suspended from work while that investigation was going on. None of us thought there was much to that, and it would have all gone away. But he had not done this basic training of how to deal with challenges, and he was unprepared. And he took his own life. He had three small children, and it devastated all of us. But this could happen to anybody, is what I'm saying. So everybody needs to stress test themselves and learn the art of self-awareness, inquiry, and all that, so that when the challenges of life come, your mind is ready. Okay. So moving on, Mike, my next point I want to explore is about negative feedback, right? Because it's so difficult for leaders, especially if you feel you've got power, and someone's telling you you're wrong or you're mistaken, and that can dent your ego big time. How do you want to explore that a little? How do leaders cope with that, and how can they encourage that in
Yeah,
organizations?
well, that last word you used there was really important, and I should encourage it because it's really important. Nobody wants negative feedback. It's a horrible thing. It makes you feel really uncomfortable, but it's the way that you get better. It's the learning from mistakes, the learning from failure. And I think the word I'd use is encouraging challenge. If we just all convince ourselves that we're right, then you end up with groupthink and you end up with completely the wrong answer. And it's really difficult. It's really difficult in a hierarchical organization, particularly something like the army, where rank is so important. Speaking truth to power, we call it. One of the phrases which I often hear, or used to hear a lot, was a senior leader saying, I'm open to challenge. I enjoy challenge. And that's great. That's a first step towards actually having challenge. People would say, my door is always open. Great, fantastic. The problem is, very few people are actually going to go through it. Very few people are actually going to challenge, particularly the lower down the organization that you are. I think it's the duty of a leader, the more senior, the more important this duty is, to actively seek challenge, to go and find it, to go out from the office, to go and walk the floor plate, to go and sit down next to the most junior person, to have the reverse mentoring and all the other ways you can do this. I used to have a little corner of the army headquarters, and in that little corner, I had a little table. And that table became known as the challenge table because anybody could come and sit at that table and say whatever they wanted. Now, not everybody came and sat at that table because they didn't. But anybody who did took that opportunity to say whatever they wanted. It was a safe space. So you've got to, as a leader, the more senior, the more important it becomes to create those safe spaces to hear the different opinions, which may be directly contrary to what you want. But it's only through doing that that you'll make great decisions.
Yes.
Really difficult.
And Mike, it requires enormous personal development, enormous personal confidence. Because one of the things, if take you're a political leader, for example, you're so concerned about your self-image all the time, what people are thinking about you. They have their PR machines and all of that. So the idea of criticism, recently somebody got fired just for saying the truth to power, in government. I think he was in the Home Office. So important. And
And was a
I'll give you an
very
example.
competitive
Sorry,
leader.
go on. But I'll give you my story. I was operating in theater, and I had this wonderful relationship with my team. So take them out, and as you say, you have to encourage the lowest person in the team, or the most junior person rather, to be able to speak up. And one day they saved my ass because somebody said to me, "Manoj, are you operating on, is this patient on a right side or a left-sided problem?" And I was on the wrong side. And yeah, exactly. You see, in a 30-year career, of course it's going to happen to you. But if you don't have that relationship, another colleague of mine in Wales took out the wrong kidney, the wrong-sided kidney. Then the patient had to have the other kidney removed as well, and then all sorts of problems. But that surgeon may not have had the best relationship with his team because somebody in that team would have known what's going on. So this ability to receive negative feedback, give negative feedback with intelligence, comes from this deeper self-awareness.
There's
Okay.
something deeply cultural about this because there's a self-awareness of the leader who must be receptive to that. There's also the organizational culture that exists within an organization that allows not just one-on-one to that leader, but actually it becomes the feature of that organization to do it. And there's some great organizations out there. The aviation industry has gone to an enormous strides to ensure that that culture of safety is built on that openness. When somebody has a near miss, people report it.
Yes.
Matthew Syed's written Black Box Thinking. It's a great example. Some great examples in that book about where you've got that culture of openness to learn from failure and also contrast it with those where they aren't. And I think it's a leader's duty to ensure that culture exists. That's for sure.
And you have to kind of step away from the cultural tradition you're part of. For example, in Asia, saving face and, the whole ego thing, because everyone is kind of buttering you up. And so on. And to rise above all of that and still be able to receive criticism, which may feel really hard. So, one of my earliest teachers in orthopedics, Graham Apley, he taught me, he said, "Manoj, if you're the leader of the team and you're the first person who needs to say, I made a mistake, and to be able to own that mistake." And that encourages everyone else in your team to say, "Yeah, boss, I made a mistake too." And it's going to be well received. You're not going to be shouted down. Okay. So my last point, before we open the floor to everyone, is to talk about decision making. How can self-awareness help us with making better decisions? Do you want to get the ball rolling on that, Mike?
Yeah, it's a great way to finish because I think everything we've spoken to before leads to this point.
Yes.
That ability to accept criticism, that ability to build those relationships, that trusting relationship, that ability to know that you can cope with the most stressful ways, the ability to get your message across and listen to the feedback itself. I think all of that is about the end product, which is the better decision, because at the end of the day, the leader is there to make the call.
Yes.
It's the best call will come from the the ability to have an organization and leadership sort of culture around you that has got multiple feeds coming into it. So I think the way I would really conclude all of this is that self-awareness, as reflected in all those things that we've discussed, the product of that is better decision-making.
Yes.
And who doesn't want to make better decisions?
Yes. And just to give you a few examples of how self-awareness, or this deeper understanding of yourself, can help you with that. For example, operating in the background in all of us is our own self-interest. And if you're not aware of it, that is going to drive your decision-making. And so many managers and leaders, as you know, make decisions. You can see that in politics all the time, that serve them rather than the country or the organization that they're part of. So my story example of that is, say you come to me with a disc prolapse, I can send you to physiotherapy where I learn nothing, or I can operate on you and I learn a good packet. Nobody can criticize my decision. But if I'm not aware of my self-interest, I'll make a decision that suits me rather than my patient. The other area, the other thing that's always operating in the background is fear. And we need to be, we are not aware of it. So our fear can either stop us from making the tough decisions that need to be made and just shirk them and delay them and, you know, kick the ball into the long grass. Or we make a decision that protects us because I'm afraid of my reputation. So I don't stand up and say, look, I made a mistake. This has happened, whatever it is. Of course, my conditioning, my ego and all of that plays a big role. Okay. So I'm just going to take a moment, Mike, before, and everyone, I'd love your comments and questions. So please think of what you'd like to add. But I'm going to take a moment and show people around the Happier Me app and all the resources we've developed which could help you be a better leader. So let me do that in a second. Okay. So this is the Happier Me app. It's on your computer, but it's also on your phone. And we're teaching only one thing, which is self-awareness. But then how to apply that to four big areas of your life. One is mental health. Second is relationships. The third is to overcome addiction or avoid it. And the fourth is to develop your soft skills, communication, leadership, to succeed at work. So at the top is a big section called Feel Better Now. So there's usually there's a breathing exercise, a meditation, a short video. And once you're over that, then there's a more detailed module on, say, exploring stress. One second. Is there a voice, someone? Is there some audio in the background that I need to mute? So sorry, give me a second. No? Okay, it's fine. So, for example, the module on stress at the end has how do you meet stress with wisdom? And you have 14 ways you can respond, including sort of, you know, the deep breathing exercise, the zooming out. And all the way through, there's an online journal which allows you to reflect on how you would respond in that situation to the challenge that you might be facing. So that's the Feel Better Now section. Then there's a daily practice. You can track your progress through the app. And we have eight big subjects: work and leadership, mental health, relationships, addiction, managing emotions, all the things that leaders would need. But if you look at the work and leadership section, of course, you want to feel better now if you feel dealing with stress and anxiety. But this deeper understanding can be applied to everything, to leadership, to communication, dealing with failure, challenging, bullying, having better relationships, making better decisions, dealing with criticism, and kindness. What gets in the way of being kind? So lots of resources there. Here's a quick section called Find Quick Answers. So why do I feel lonely, for example? And it maps to the module on loneliness. And, you know, we didn't talk about that, Mike, but loneliness is one of the big problems of leadership, as you know. Or how can I feel calm? And that leads you to a breathing exercise section. Then there's a section called pathway. So someone who wants to go on a personal development journey to be the best version of themselves. So this offers a five-step guided program, beginning with developing a calm mind, then understanding yourself, understanding how your mind works, managing your emotions, and then applying all that to succeed in life. There are podcasts, videos, library of live events. This event will be in the podcast library soon. But I just want to end by highlighting these exercises. So when someone says, "How do I become self-aware or emotionally intelligent?" These are step-by-step guided exercises. So take a moment, for example, if you talk about what do you know about how your mind works? So this is like an 8-day or 9-day challenge. And every day you're going to learn one new thing. So on day three, you'll notice how your mind is reactive. Or day four, you'll assume what you think is true. Or day six, it could be notice how your mind judges all the time. And this deeper understanding feeds into emotional intelligence. Okay, I'm going to pause there and open the door to some comments and questions. So Jondi is a coach, leadership coach and life coach in Atlanta in the United States, and an old friend of ours and happier me. What do you make of all this, Jondi?
Well, I'm delighted that you've taken on this subject because I think its time has come. We have a real dearth of leadership, and so encouraging people to think about it, step into it. What does it mean? Ponder it on a more conscious level. I think it's a fantastic idea that the world could use right now. I don't think that a lot of us, unlike our guest, perhaps it was not modeled to everyone. We did not have a training program that was as structurally opaque. Well, no, transparent. Forget that analogy. We did not see very easily the steps that might be taken to achieving that unless we were in some kind of program that aspired to teach us leadership, right? So I've got, veteran brothers and things like that. So I know what we're talking about. But in the everyday world, I think that's where the app comes in really nicely, is self-awareness. Starting there, I think you have to start there. And then you ponder this question of leadership. How am I a leader? What do leaders do? Am I being one? Am I missing something in order to be one? In other words, how do I step into the role of what is needed now instead of wringing my hands? Because I think that's where we are. And I'll shut up now.
Okay, thank you. Zubin, do you want to come in with anything? Did you any thoughts on what we've been discussing today?
I think terminology. Hi, everyone. Definitely. Personally, I find I think the point John D. made was quite valid. That we often find ourselves in leadership positions because, or even Mike made actually earlier, is find ourselves in leadership positions because of seniority or competence in a particular skill set that is very different from leadership skill set.
Right.
We found within our organization as well, we've got fantastic, we're not actually practicing, we're fantastic architects, fantastic technologists, but leadership is a different game. And they've got to raise their game to come to that place. And there's no formal way of actually becoming a leader. You can't, yes, there are leadership courses, but you're not actually, like I said, through schooling and formal education, you're not trained to be a leader. Some have them have it naturally, and there are people who you really want them to be good leaders, because they're very competent in what they do, and you believe that they'll be able to, lead a team effectively. But you've got to equip them with the tools to do it, and I think that's where the app comes in, where you're actually providing those tools and that insight, and then helping them develop all the way. I think it requires something more than just the app. It does require the mentorship and the coaching and other elements that go with it. But certainly, it's a start to actually understand yourself and then build up as a leader. And I suppose that applies to any profession, really.
You made such a great point that we become leaders because of seniority. Like I become a consultant surgeon, and then suddenly I'm the leader of the whole team. I've got no experience in leadership, no training, nothing. And all around us, we see really bad examples of that, right? and you know, and they're a disaster for the teams and disaster for the organization, and so on. And lots of leaders.
I mean, I think it's even more complicated now because that's probably always been the case. But right now, you know, it's really difficult leading in the current situation. You know, the current complexity from the instantaneousness of social media, the sort of pylon culture that can come if things go wrong. It's a really complex environment to be a leader right now. And so therefore, there's even more need to invest in some form of development. I've been hugely fortunate. I probably spent 3 years of my entire 33 years just on leadership courses, possibly even more. That's amazing. That's not a luxury that is going to be there for every sector. Of course it's not. But goodness, isn't there something that we need to do more than just expect somebody to be a leader because of, as you say, seniority?
Yes, can't be right. Yes. So important. And so many leadership programs. I mean, I read an article saying that there's so much money spent on leadership training, and a lot of it is ineffective. And I think partly it's because self-awareness is an inside job. I can't teach it to you in a lecture. You know, it's something you have to do yourself, which is where what we're trying to do with the app is to encourage reflection with the online journal. So it's like someone asking you a question and you having to respond. Thank you for that. Afshan, were you going to say something? Sorry, I saw you unmute yourself, but you're welcome to contribute if you wanted to ask a question or say something.
But no, it was an extremely informative and very useful conversation, to be honest. And I think one of the things which perhaps is extremely important, I mean, you know, as everybody said, you're not trained for leadership. You just have to dive in deep and then learn as you're learning to swim. But the most important thing, I think, is that if whoever the manager is goes in with the right intention of bringing everybody along rather than serving the self-interest, I think whatever they do will actually end up well and they will turn into a good leader. So I think intention is extremely important. But I found it very, very informative and useful. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yes. I mean, I spent 30 years in the NHS and healthcare and came across very, very dysfunctional people who had no self-awareness, self-understanding. And this didn't serve them or their teams or their patients. And I think this is the missing ingredient, really. Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Taneja, would you like to offer us anything?
Sorry, my dogs are disturbing, but it was a very good lesson. And I, being a leadership coach, I do see what you were mentioning all the time, that there are mostly leaders who have not got formal learning and development in the leadership or about self-awareness. And then they work out of the position power and or financial power because they have the decision-making on the bonuses and salary increments rather than working about the personal power and helping people. So I think your app would be very, very helpful for all those people that I work with and also for myself.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. All right, Mike, do you want to start summarizing? I think we're coming to the end of what we set out to do today.
So it's been really interesting discussion, Anusha. I think if I reflect back on my 33-year-old self and the mistakes I used to make then and the self-awareness I didn't have then, and I think we shouldn't beat ourselves up that because either we haven't had the formal training or whatever it is, we all have to be on this journey of learning and self-awareness is part of that learning. And it is through that failure, through that self-awareness, that I think we all get better. The mistakes I made when I was a junior officer are quite legendary. I think I could write a book about them. And if only I'd been a bit more self-aware when that
was. But of course, you can smile about it now, but at the time, I'm sure it didn't feel like that.
Because Jenny talked about EFT, I quickly Googled it. I've got it. So thank you, Manoj. It's been a really interesting session.
Yeah. So I would say, in summary, that this journey of self-awareness is about learning. We're used to learning only about the world around us, but it requires us to be curious about the world within. And anybody can do it, and it enrich your life, whether you're a leader or not. And should you come to be in a leadership position, of course, it'll make your job so much easier and so much more enjoyable too. But separate from that, the impact on organizations and the world, if we had better quality of leadership around the world in political circles and organizations, of course, would be immense. And to deal with the challenges that the century is going to present, I think we need to raise the game in terms of the quality of leadership all around that we have. Okay, so Mike, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon and my guests from around the world. And of course, I will edit this and share it with everyone. So thank you so much. Have a good weekend.